welcome your ears to episode number 284 of the Triple Option with RBKD on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be, live, local, and digital on the Horn app, on Twitch, and at hornfm.com. On today's show, a former Deshaun Watson teammate tells the world where Deshaun Watson wants to be traded. Dak Prescott's offseason continues to get better and better. And was the Astros cheating scandal more extensive than we originally thought? Joined alongside by a lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He's also the inventor of the Corona kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how are we doing today?
Doing great. Very happy to be here. How are you doing, brother?
Doing great. Very happy to be here. How you doing, brother? There's an echo in here apparently today. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn and lifetime Austinite. He's so much of a man, they had to take one of his balls away to keep it fair for the rest of us. He knows where your IT guy's IT guy went to college. He is Kevin Dunn. KD, what's going on?
I think I'm doing great. I think I'm happy to be here, but I'm not really sure. You know what? I got someone who can take care of me on this. I think they got a much better answer than I do. I'm clearly not prepared. I'm just not ready for this. So this guy will answer for me.
I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest.
Very easy question.
I know. I'm just not ready today. I'm in a Garrett Cole type of mind.
It's not good.
Somewhere my Amy's out there listening. Slide into the DMs.
Wow.
Not going to get a $100 million contract.
Garrett Cole's never going to live it down.
He won't.
He's never going to live it down.
He won't.
Yeah.
No. He will be able to live KD asking his wife to slide in his DMs down, though. I don't think he's too worried about
that.
Yeah,
he's not worried about that at all.
No.
I guess it would have been around then. But he kind of slid in somehow. He had to talk to his teammate at UCLA and say, "Hey, bro, I think your sister's hot. Can I take her out on a date?" And Brandon Crawford was smart and thought, "Yeah, you're throwing 99 here your freshman year. You can take her out on a date."
Yeah.
You're damn right you can.
She is well off financially.
Yes.
I would say. I'll be here as well. I am BK, Brad Kellner. Together, we are the Triple Option with RBKD, rocking and rolling until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. We appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Thursday afternoon with us. We will talk a little Major League Baseball later in the show. We'll talk some Texas Longhorn baseball as well, as we're a little bit more than 2 days away from the Longhorns opening up the Super Regional against South Florida. Game 1 Saturday night at 8 o'clock. We'll have that for you right here on the Horn. David Pierce was on with Bucky and Aaron this morning. We've got some audio from that interview coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll get into some Deshaun Watson news. Another very curious decision made by the Houston Texans as well. That'll come up around 3:30. But, gents, to open up today's program, we're 86 days away from Texas Longhorn football. And we've talked about it a lot on this show, that it's very easy to negatively recruit Texas these days. And the ammunition just increased thanks to Chris Hummer of 24/7 Sports. He took a look at how college football teams have been developing their five-star talent over the last 12 years. And you say, well, why 12 years? Well, Nick Saban got to Alabama in 2008. So this article kind of focuses on the job that Nick Saban has done in terms of developing guys during his time in Tuscaloosa. An unbelievably impressive stat for the Crimson Tide. Alabama has signed 41 draft-eligible five-star players since 2008. Those players were picked in the first round of the NFL draft 48.8% of the time. The other 285 five-star players who did not sign with Alabama were selected in the first round only 18.3% of the time. So a five-star who picks Bama is nearly triply likely to be a first-round pick than if he went somewhere else. So
Tripley.
I think that's a word.
It should be if it's not.
I didn't get the red squiggly line when I typed it in my notes
today. I know what you're talking about.
So
it is.
It's probably in Urban Dictionary somewhere.
Yes.
There we go. Well, I think the meaning for that is probably different than what I'm looking for.
That is definitely true.
But who knows? At least during business hours. Outside of business hours, maybe I'm looking for that Urban Dictionary definition. So Alabama's on one end of the spectrum, but unfortunately, guys, Texas is on the other end of that spectrum. Only 11 programs have recruited 10 or more five-star players since 2008, and Texas is one of them. Well, they came in dead last in both turning five stars into first-round picks and turning five stars into NFL draft picks.
No surprise.
Only 7.1% of five stars that Texas recruited became first-round picks. That's one out of 14. You guys care to take a guess who that one was? The
Malcolm
one five-star.
Brown.
There it is.
Yeah,
Malcolm Brown.
It. Last first-round pick.
Last first-round pick that we've had.
Yeah.
I didn't have to go through a lot of first-round picks in my head.
Unfortunately.
This wasn't Rod's time.
Yeah.
And what about this one? So only 28.6% of five-stars that signed with Texas since 2008 have become draft picks at all. Mm. That's four out of 14. Malcolm Brown is one of them. Do you guys know off the top of your head the other three five-stars that Texas has recruited in the last 12 years that have turned into draft picks?
Caden Stearns.
I'll let Caden. No. It's five stars turned into first-round draft picks.
No,
right?
just draft picks.
Malcolm Brown's the only first-round pick. This is just draft picks.
So Caden Stearns was a five-star.
Caden Stearns is one of them. Malcolm Brown's obviously one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Two more to guess.
Just draft picks in general.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the other Malcolm Brown.
Not the other Malcolm Brown.
No, he was undrafted.
Oh, God, was he? I thought he was like a sixth or seventh rounder.
Yeah, he was an undrafted free agent. Curtis Brown?
Not Curtis Brown.
Malik Jefferson.
Malik Jefferson is one of them.
Jefferson.
Third round pick.
And?
Defensive player.
Sergio Kendall?
Not Sergio Kendall. I think he's a little bit before the...
Jeffcoat?
He started.
Undrafted.
He was undrafted.
Okafor?
Nope.
Mm.
One to five star.
One to five star.
Rod Wright? No, he's way before that. I don't know.
Jordan Hicks.
Hicks,
Jordan
okay.
Hicks.
The linebacker.
Yeah. From Ohio.
So four out of 14 five-stars that Texas has recruited since 08 have become draft picks at all. Both of those numbers less than any team in the country. KD, I know we've talked about it a lot on this show. No surprise, but more ammunition against Texas in terms of recruiting.
Yeah, it's ammunition. You call it negative recruiting, and I guess it is, but it's factual. So this is not Neuheisel talking about Charles Whitman and how dangerous it may be to walk around campus when something that happened 25 years earlier and nothing's happened since then and have actually taken steps so that won't happen again, which was the case when he was selling that in the mid-90s. This is straight up factual. All they got to do is hit print, and it means even more now than it did. I mean, it meant a lot when Rod was there. Growing up, it felt like that, you know, it was about going to a school that you wanted to go win a championship, and that seemed to take a lot more of the pie, the percentage of why you were going to a place. Now it is about what can you do for me in the next level, and I totally get it. You know, we do that as students, right? You do that as a student if you look at, I want to be this. I want to be a vet. Well, if you want to be a vet, you may have grown up hating Texas A&M. That may be your best option to really earn what you want to earn, to take care of your family, and to have the type of career that you want to have. And the reality is that this is that next training ground, and you want to go to a place that's not only going to put you in a spot where they're going to develop you, but also people understand you're ready to go. And there are Alabama guys that have even been bust on some of those draft picks that you're talking about that did not work out at the NFL level, but because of who they were with and where they were at, there was a benefit of the doubt because of those numbers. And that's going to be the toughest thing for Sark, is that it may even be tougher than if you're Rod, you're taking over a place that didn't have any first-round picks. And you're saying, look, we're new here, and we're going to build this. Go back to Alabama and Shula and what was going on pre-Nick Saban and look at their talent and how they were developing them. It was Texas at its worst in terms of scheming guys up, strength and conditioning, just overall player development. And as we talked about yesterday, there can be three or four branches coming off of that one. Okay, are you developing guys? So you can turn it around, but the fact that Texas has been getting those guys, that's where you get the Garrett Wilson comment. That's where you get the Quinn Ewers comment. And that's where it's really easy to sell against Texas right now. There's only one way to fix it, Rod, and you know it. One way to fix it. You got to put that stuff on the field and then get those guys in the draft. And that's up to Sark. Do that sooner rather than later. I compare what he's trying to do right now to what Mac did in 98. And what Mac had to do in 98 was change the narrative and do it as quickly as possible. Make this easy for you to get that ball rolling. And that's what this first year is about.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I thought you said it very well, too. I think at this point, because we do have all of these numbers, and now even analytically, you can quantify how bad Texas has been at developing talent. It's up to Sark, in that macro discussion, right, changing the narrative you're talking about. He's still got to solve the problem, right? He's still got to solve the problem that Tom Herman, he improved upon. I guess he got some of the problem right. It's like one of those really complicated math problems,
yeah.
Right? He got, you know, they can go up on a Goodwill Hunting style, right? You go up
That's
on a dry race board.
He wasn't Will Hunting, though.
Right, exactly.
He was that guy before who'd gotten some of it.
He was meant to, exactly. You get some of it, and sometimes it takes more than one person to solve these really complicated these math problems, but... You know, that's what Sark's got to do, because we know that it's not just one issue that is affecting the development on the 40 acres of the talent they're bringing in. We know that, we know based on the recruiting rankings, which, by the way, are becoming more and more accurate by the,
yeah.
You know, by the year, based on the draft picks and success rate, the actual recruiting rankings are more and more accurate than they've ever been before.
Texas is the one aberration, which makes you think it's more of a Texas thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because more and more Texas still bringing in really, really highly ranked recruiting classes, and yet they're not getting the draftable prospects on the other side of that. I think ultimately it's like four or five things, right? It's some of those mis-evaluations that happens at every program. Texas may have more mis-evaluations, blue chips, than others, because Texas right now, based on Chris Hummer's last two studies, we talked about the other one last week, KD, Texas is the worst big-time program at developing five stars. That's what that study says. Mm-hmm. And Texas is now basically the third worst program since 2012 at developing blue chips.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the analytics say that Chris Hummer dives deep into, and his him and Christian Corona, he did a really good job of it too. But I digress. So, you know, I think mis-evaluations is a big part of it. You're identifying the wrong blue chips. You're just getting the wrong ones. Maybe it's a bad fit for you schematically with the turnover, all that kind of stuff, but sometimes you're just identifying the wrong ones. Because we know a percentage of those are just going to be busts. Yep. Some of those five stars, they're not going to work out. They're not all going to the NFL.
Even Alabama, Kendall
Even
Sheffield.
Alabama. Ben Davis, wasn't he a five-star?
Yeah.
I mean, it happens, all right? Trust me, it happens. Okay, so that's number one, mis-evaluations. Number two, I think at Texas specifically, it's been a lot of turnover. A ton of turnover. Think about what happens when you have a lot of turnover, right? You change the scheme, you change the terminology, you got new system, new technique, new belief system, terminology, coaching styles, expectations, a new boss. And Texas had basically different positions, a new boss every other year. A different position, depending on, I mean, you go break it down. They've had since two, because we're going way, way back on this, right? They're going back. So since 2010, you've had 11 OCs with nine, will be 10 different play callers. You're going to be going on five different running backs coaches, eight different quarterback coaches. You're going to be going on.
How many O-line coaches?
It'll be seven. You had Mac McWhorter, Stacey Searles, Joe Wickline, Maddox, Wareheim, Herb Hand, and now you'll have Kyle Flood. So it'll be seven in just a 10-year span, basically, or I guess 12 years, 11 years, however you want to go there. But then wide receivers, same thing. DC, you'll have eight different defensive play callers in that time span. I mean, defensive back coach, same thing with defensive backs, nine different DB coaches. In that time span. I mean, that's a lot of turnover.
Yeah,
so not saying the coaches aren't good and not saying the players aren't good, but hell, man, it's a new system, new everything every time. Like, if I'm trying to cultivate a craft and master and perfect a technique, it's really hard to do when it keeps changing.
Yeah, right. So, everything changes.
So right, the turnover's got to be a part of it. You want more stability. That's got to be a big part of it. And I think another part of it is...
So alignment.
Yes, you could. But also, I think it's this ultimately, there's been a system failure at Texas, even going back to the Mac Brown days, where the offensive identity crisis. Now you're going to have, and that goes back to the turnover too. Now you're going to have a new offensive scheme in here. So, how many years have we had a new offensive scheme in the last few years? I mean, we've had probably nine different new offensive schemes since 2010.
Yeah.
At least nine. Mac Brown tried to change it to a ground and pound after Nick Saban beat him, and he thought he was going to win, so Mac Brown freaked out and then changed it. Then he didn't like that because that ultimately failed, so he brought in Brian Harsin. Major Applewhite got rid of Greg Davis. Brian Harsin was like, this is crazy. This is a dumpster fire here, so he got the hell out of town. And then you're like, all right, Major, it's your show. Major brought in his own different scheme, which is kind of like the pro spread, which is why he and Tom Herman got along so well. And then after that, he's out, and then you bring in Sean Watson and Joe Wickline, and for a couple of years, then Sterling Gilbert comes in with the veer and shoot, and then you bring in Tom Herman with the pro spread, but Tom Herman lets Tim Beck call the plays first, and then he calls the plays, and then he ends up hiring Mike Yurcich because he can't handle call the plays. So how many different schemes have we been on? I lose count.
32, I think.
So that's a huge part of it.
Do we think that Texas maybe should have been more patient with some of their coaching changes over the years? I mean, with head coaches, they probably couldn't afford to be more patient. But in terms of all of the position coaching / coordinator turnover that they've had, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Are the players not getting developed because the coaching is bad, or can the coaches not develop the players because they're getting turned over every year?
Chicken and egg.
Chicken or the egg. But you kind of answered it as you started there. So you said it's kind of hard with head coaches, right? All that trickles down.
Yeah.
So if the head coach knows he has limited time, is he going to give the scheme and the OC and the DC and the offensive line coach more time?
No. And we found that out here a lot over the last decade.
Which is why Rod just mentioned really three coaches. You can count Sark as the fourth during that span, yet how many offensive coordinators are in it? So that means that the same coach was going through stuff and trying to stick with an idea and hitting eject really quickly because he felt the pressure.
So you will have something different there because, you know, with Mac Brown and with Tom Herman, Charlie Strong, you had a lot of turnover with the offensive coaching staff because of the offensive identity crisis and the play callers. You won't have that with Sark. There is no buffer between who's calling the plays, who's responsible for the offense, and whose offense it is. Remember, for a while, I was like, oh, well, I don't know whose offense time or who's calling the plays. I'm like, well, it's a collaborative effort. Tim Beck calls them sometimes. Sometimes I call. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And then with Mike Yurcich, we still weren't really sure who was actually calling
Tom
the
Herman
plays.
Would be talking into the mic before every play.
So you won't have that here. So maybe.
Though we became that jealous boyfriend that was overlooking everything.
Yeah, we did. But maybe
who are you texting right now? Just relax.
You get rid of the minutia now, so maybe you have a little bit more, I don't know, just transparency, and that'll allow for the program to, I don't know, have a little bit more stability on that side of the ball.
What are the odds that Steve Sarkisian's initial coaching staff all returns in year two? I mean, what are the odds for the first time in seemingly forever that every single member of a Texas football coaching staff comes back for a second straight year?
And what
has to happen? Like, does Texas have to win 10 games? Does Texas have to get to Arlington for that to happen? Or if things are pretty average this year, let's say the Longhorns go 8-4, and there's a position group that you can point to and say, oh, they were kind of the reason why we lost four games, then can Sark afford to wait? Sark afford to tell this fan base that, no, I trust this guy, it was year one, give him time, we'll get our players in here, it'll be okay? Or does he have to do what his predecessors did and say, I got to make a move?
That's a good question. And also the flip side of that, if you do win those 10 games, with how fluid the coaching carousel is right now, what's a chance that someone who's a DB coach doesn't say, hey, I'm going to go take the DC job at Louisiana Tech, right?
Yeah, just get a promotion.
Just get a promotion.
Really good coaches.
So in terms of the whole coaching staff coming back, I would put it at pretty low. And then there's also that it could be a really good year. We're really excited. Everything I talked about with getting the ball rolling and changing that narrative, at least on the field with eyeballs, saying these guys look better, they look more developed, the scheme seems to fit who these guys are and their skill set. I would still say it's low because, look, this is not a perfect staff. Nick Saban didn't hire a perfect staff. And he's the best college coach of all time, right? There's going to be maybe one or two changes. If there's only one guy
that's a tweak, and that's
a compliment. You really nailed your staff to begin with. It's not going to be perfect, though.
Yeah. No,
But BK poses a good question, Rod. 1 year, would he stick with that?
I'm sure he can tweak something. He's really confident in his staff. One thing you guys have brought up, too, like they opened their, right? He had a blank check to pretty much sign his staff. Mm-hmm. They opened up the coffers, if you will, for Sark, and CDC made that known. So I think this staff, he paid, you know, top dollar for this staff. I think they're going to stick around for a little while unless they underachieve, or like some aspect grossly underachieves a position or a phase, and then you go, man, we got to make a change right now. That was really bad.
Yeah.
And you were terrible. And last year, to me, that kind of was Andre Coleman was that. Honestly, the wide receivers and the DBs both were in right. that category.
I'll look at Joseph this year. We'll see.
Was it Jay Valai?
Jay Valai.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
he's had 7 jobs since then, but has only coached at really on the field on one of them. That guy, talk about the coaching carousel.
He had three jobs in 2 months,
it felt like.
You're right. No, he went to the Eagles, right?
Yes, after
then,
two other
then he went
stops.
To the U of H or something? No, you're right, man. He was all over the place. He's got connections. People want to hire
does.
Him.
He does. He
interviews well. But
he should be in sales. But he kind of is.
He kind of is.
How many of the coaches that have left Texas over the last decade left under their own accord? I mean, y'all bring up the idea of a position coach getting a promotion to a coordinator job somewhere else after this year. How many times has that happened here? Like, I would love for that to happen. That would be awesome because it feels like 90%+ of the time a coach leaves, it's because they're getting fired, not because they're getting hired by somebody else to get a better job.
Great point.
Well, and I'll give you guys, we talked about it yesterday, that have actually gotten head jobs after,
but
they were forced out. So Major and Manny Diaz...
It's yeah, they got like forced out. Exactly.
They
like
get
they
a head
ended
job
up getting
later,
better
right,
jobs,
yeah.
but they got forced out. Like, have we had any over the last decade? Will Muschamp might be the last guy who actually left Texas for a better job. Everybody else who's been a part of this coaching turnover has been canned, or at least the writing has been on the wall
that they needed to go. Yeah, you're
so
right.
So I wouldn't kill. Well, no, I wouldn't kill for that. I'd kill for some things. But I would be thrilled if other schools are poaching members of Sark's coaching staff.
Right.
Because that'd mean this coaching staff actually did well.
Man, I can't. I'm trying to think the ones that have left on their own, and it's tough. Coach Aquino left and then came back. Remember that?
Yeah,
he like left briefly for a while, then came back.
Jeff Traylor even got the UTSA job, but that was with the coaching turnover, and they didn't retain him.
They didn't retain, and they should have retained him.
I agree.
Not looking back in retrospect,
Beast Texas is that important?
Yeah, BK, you're right. I can't think of another one, man. That's wow.
I know.
That blows my mind.
So the turnover itself is bad enough, but it's not like you're having Nick Saban-style turnover where, yeah, your coaches are getting hired away
being
by
plucked.
Other schools. It's because they're doing a bad job of getting fired.
But they end up, like Katie says, becoming head coaches later. So they're good coaches. At least they have, like, the good coaching, I don't know, foundation and pedigree because they end up becoming head coaches later. Jeff Traylor is a head coach now. We talked about Jay Norvell.
Yeah.
Ends up being a head coach. Major Applewhite ends up being a head coach. So it's something about where we get them in their coaching, like, growth in, you know what I mean, a coaching maturity. It's like we got Manny Diaz at the wrong time.
Yeah.
It's like we got Brian Harsin like at the wrong time. It's weird. Or maybe the environment here is so toxic, it does not allow for the cultivation of coaching development.
Right.
Because coaches got to deal with more than just the players do. And maybe because they got to deal with, off the field stuff here with, I don't know, behind the scenes politics, all that kind of stuff, and I won't go into detail, but I've talked to coaches, and that kind of stuff exists, right? How where are you on the coaching hierarchy? How much does the head coach really even like you?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, as you've been there for a while, I know it sounds crazy, but that comes into play.
No, that does come into play.
It comes into play. So,
than the average fan thinks.
More than
the
average fan thinks.
And more than it should.
Yeah. Coaches' wives not getting along. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. It causes
drama.
We're
getting back to Muschamp here, aren't we?
it's a thing. All right? So it's a lot of stuff that coaches have to deal with, and sometimes they figure, you know what, let's just go somewhere else where I don't have a lot of the drama and I can just focus on coaching. And I don't have 5-6 different entities, Horns 24/7, Orange Bloods, Inside Texas, that when my position group has a down week, they all go in on me.
Right.
They all go in. Because it's just, you know what I mean? And we have great football minds and analysts in this market, too.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah. Well, take your thoughts, 337-3776. The article from Chris Hummer comes as no surprise. Texas, the worst Power 5 team in terms of developing blue-chip talent into NFL draft picks.
Here's the good news. You guys are watching a game right now on LHN where we stormed the field against Houston before it ended.
It's sad.
Get that idiot off the goalpost. So once they turn it, the fan base is going to be into it. Trust me.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Unbelievable. Wow. Look at the dancing right there.
Yeah, little Manny Hazard.
Man,
Manny Hazard could go. But, boy, they shut him down with press coverage. I was so pissed. I was at this game. I was pissed at this point because it was 45-10 in the fourth quarter. And after what they had done to Texas, I wanted this to be 63-10 at the end of it. And they got that cheap one with Manny Hazard late.
Nice. And they're dancing?
Yeah. It, dude, it was.
Wow.
That's what Houston was back in the day.
It's a bad bit.
They were Miami Light.
That is a bad bit. I agree.
337-3776. It's the triple option with RBKD alongside Rod Babers and Kevin Dunn. I am BK Brad Kellner. Specs text line 337-3776. We're live on Twitch, hornfm.com, to watch the show. When we come back, we'll jump from college to the NFL. We've known for a while that Deshaun Watson has wanted to be traded, but now we might have an indication about where Deshaun Watson wants to be traded. We'll tell you up next.
Welcome back to the Triple Ounce with RBKD. Okay, BK, do you have a picture of the tower lit with 6-9 on it in honor of the 1969 national title team? Do you have that?
I don't think I do.
How did you not go out there when they did that? Now you're upset with yourself. We're watching on Longhorn Network. They're doing a little homage, if you will, saluting the 1969 national title team for Texas. And they showed the tower lit orange with 6-9 on it.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
saw BK's face light up when he saw it.
You never knew that?
And he was upset. I think he's upset with himself that he doesn't have that as like his screensaver on his phone.
Wow. You know, there are a few reasons I wish I was alive back then.
Mm-hmm.
That might be at the top of the list. So I could have gotten a picture, although I wouldn't have had a cell phone to
take
a picture with.
It'd have taken, yeah.
I don't know how I would have gotten a picture of that.
Very expensive back then.
Yeah.
You could get 70.
There were cameras back then, but they weren't as accessible as they are today, of course.
You could get the 70 one, too, which is pretty cool.
Nah, 69 is better.
The 70 is just plus a thumb.
60.
Well, the thumb, though, just all you got to do is swipe over, is what I'm saying. I mean, how dare you?
That's what you were saying, yeah.
Man, always got fisted.
But 69, no, that's, I remember when they did that. I think it was a couple of years ago, actually.
I'm sure it's on Google. I'll find it. But I have been looking for a new phone background.
No, actually, I think it was 2019. It was like the
50th anniversary.
Right? I think it was like not 2019 then.
Mm.
Yeah, it was the 50th anniversary.
They probably wore some throwback jerseys and the entire fan base lost their minds.
Yeah.
That's not the right shade of orange.
And do you know how good this program is right now?
Yeah, that's valid.
No, that's the real reason why Texas has struggled so much over the last decade, because they've messed with the jerseys too much.
Yeah,
that has nothing to do with player development or coaching turnover. Oh. They keep tweaking the jerseys. Mm-hmm. Then they put the Longhorn on the jersey. The Big 12 logo's too big. I'm tired of it.
The most, the most kind of random, strange belief among Longhorn fans as to why Texas has struggled since the start of the decade, 2010, I should say then, because there's a new decade, is LHN, actually.
Oh, yep.
More people bring up LHN than any other thing. As like a curse.
Nice job, KD.
No, I'm just why am I?
Trust me, you don't think I've heard that?
I'm not hating on
especially
LHN.
Heard it then.
I think LHN's awesome. Great people work on LHN.
But yeah, there were a lot of people blaming it. But guess what? It still wasn't that.
No, it wasn't.
I'm not saying that helped. But
it wasn't that either.
But also that didn't. That could have helped.
It should have helped.
If they would have been winning.
It should have helped.
Yeah.
It should have. It was like, it should have been a game changer, and it wasn't because Texas wasn't good.
It's not.
So it wasn't.
You know, we played DeLoss yesterday. Apparently, that came out that I guess they had initially said, hey, it'll be an A&M Texas channel.
Yeah, one of the Lone Star Network.
Yeah, and A&M was like, no.
Yeah.
Ooh, I've got the audio for that.
One of the Lone Star Network.
Let's hear it. D-Lo.
Do we want to do that
D-Lo.
Here?
D-Lo.
Is his phone on?
I don't think his phone rings in the background of this cut, but here is DeLoss Dodds on the On Second Thought podcast with Kirk Bowles and Cedric Golden of The Statesman talking about approaching A&M about the Longhorn Network.
That started at a meeting, and one of our staff meetings, about we need to get some exposure for our sports other than football and basketball, and we talked about how we could do that with television, and talked about a network. We figured that it would cost us a lot of money to do it. I talked to Bill about the possibility of putting the two universities together and having a statewide network that we both could use, and there'd be plenty of product to fill the time. Then we talked to Fox about it, and they offered us $3 million a year plus all the expenses. And, that was huge. And then ESPN comes in and offers, an average of $15 million a year for 20 years.
Right.
And but Bill had turned us down on it. Bill did not want to do that. I don't know whether that would have worked out, whether it had been a good deal or a bad deal, but we did make the offer, and they did refuse it.
How about that?
Bill Byrne, is that the AD he's talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or president, whoever is AD, I believe.
Yeah. And now, and the Aggies will say that it was the right thing for the Aggies because they went to the SEC and still got more money.
Right.
You know, through their television deal. So, and that, they did what was right for A&M. So, just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Devil's advocate.
Crazy. Yeah.
No, it, but you, DeLoss was a visionary.
I just think still it's funny. Is. I mean, a lot of A&M fans visionary. Will say one of the reasons, if not the biggest reason they left for the SEC was because of the Longhorn Network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because they weren't involved in any sort of network and there was no Big 12 conference network. No, Texas literally wanted to make a network with just UT and A&M, and A&M's brass said no.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out. Like, A&M to the SEC has been great for them financially,
mm-hmm.
but there was a way that they could have been a part of this network, and they'd still be in the Big 12, and we'd still be playing them.
They didn't want to be little brother. The whole point was to get from
exactly
underneath
it.
The shadow of Texas,
ding, ding, ding.
And that would have put you still right underneath the shadow of Texas. You want to get from underneath the shadow. So I supported the move by the Aggies. I still do.
That's the key. I would just say, though, especially with the SEC, that and I said this about Texas, too, and we're talking about what conference they should go to. Most conferences say, what kind of money can you bring me? Those are two schools, obviously, with what they're earning. A&M is going to earn a lot with or without the SEC.
Great point.
So,
great point.
And that's a shout out to y'all, Aggies.
Yeah.
That's giving y'all love that those are two schools that I wouldn't focus on that as much. I would look at the other dynamics of a situation that say, what really helped us out?
Yeah. And the SEC did overall.
Yeah.
I mean, the emancipation from the Big 12 has helped the Aggies, whether you like it or not.
Well, Ohio State's playing an SEC West schedule. And they were already on the brink as a four seed in 2014, the year they won it. Do they get into that playoff? Probably not. Those are some of the dynamics I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, it's a lot
you
of
can
play.
You can beat yourself up before you even get that chance to get in there.
It's a lot of play. I would say that the pressure, though, of playing in the SEC has also made the Aggies up their game. Like, they've been forced to. They went in the neighborhoods with all the blue bloods. They had to go. They had to go pay Jimbo. Yeah, but they had. You could mean that by a lot of different things. But they had to go pay Jimbo the big bucks. They just got the Schlossnagel thing done. They understand. Like, they got to up your game now. You want to be in the SEC West, even to just be competitive.
Yeah,
like above average.
It didn't work for Arkansas. We can say that now. 30 years in.
Yeah.
TBD. TBD on A&M on the field.
TBD. All right, TBD also, what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson? We have no idea what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. But maybe Kareem Jackson does, former teammate of Deshaun Watson, who is now a member of the Denver Broncos. He was on a podcast, Catching Fades. It's the podcast, right, BK?
Mm-hmm.
And who hosts this podcast? Aqib Talib?
The great Aqib Talib.
Oh, oh right. Jayhawk.
Jesus, guy. Yeah, I was like, why is he saying
he played both ways there, didn't he?
No, he was great, though. I love
him. I mean, he was definitely a DB, but I remember
him.
He would line up at receiver.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
To go with Kerry Meyer and Briscoe and those guys.
They had some dudes, man.
He was awesome.
They were good at football one time.
Yeah, they
believe it or not. Yeah, this audio comes from that podcast. It's a back-and-forth conversation between Aqib Talib, the former Bronco, and Kareem Jackson, the current Bronco, and they're talking about Deshaun Watson and where DW4 might end up.
I honestly think y'all going to have Deshaun soon.
Yeah, I got a great relationship with Deshaun. I've been talking to him the last couple of weeks, man, and like, all he's been telling me is, like, look, Jack, just tell him, like, come that's where me. I want to be. Like, he like, that's where I want to be. I'm like, man.
He see the setup, the line straight. He see the setup.
He like, man, listen, that's why, I want to be in Denver. He's like, and like during the time while I was going through, you know, my little free agency thing and I end up signing back here, before I signed, he called, he was like, man, are you going to sign? I was like, I don't know, I ain't sure yet. He was like, well, you know, let me know what you're going to do, whatever, whatever. And I signed back. He's like, listen, man, tell him that I want to be in Denver. So I'm like, hey, man.
Hey, y'all hear it, man? You know what Sean would be. Y'all hear it?
Okay.
There you go. Interesting.
I like the music, man.
Yeah.
I need that for one and done, baloney.
I put that in myself.
Boom. Did you ever write?
No, I did not.
What's the podcast called again? Catching Fades?
Catching Fades.
Oh, Fades.
I saw that. Yeah, I'm sure it has double meanings.
It does.
Bro,
meanings.
I'm low key fade, bro.
Yeah. I wonder if Zeke's ever been a guest on that podcast. So, what do y'all think? I mean, I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to get traded anytime soon. We've got to figure out what's going on with his legal situation. But Denver, perhaps in the market for a quarterback. They've been linked to Aaron Rodgers a time or 2,000 this offseason. Rod B, any chance a Deshaun Watson to Denver trade comes to fruition?
Well, I mean, I will say that Deshaun's probably telling all of his friends that so that they can pass along the message so that he can incentivize teams to make an effort to trade for him. But the
That was a team masseuse. All right.
All right. See, too soon.
You're right. I'm the one that did it. All on me.
But you look at the wide receiving core, Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton, KJ Hamler. I mean, they got the weapons on the outside. They're just missing a signal caller to bring it all together.
I like it. I mean, and that was one of the things I was looking at early. Denver, not only Aaron Rodgers we were talking about, but then also could Deshaun possibly go there? It does set up well for him. It's up to Denver at this point to kind of play out where is Deshaun Watson. But I hate to be this guy. Look, if it's criminal and it gets to that, then it'll be completely different. But right now, these are still all civil cases, correct?
Yes, but there is a criminal investigation.
There's a criminal investigation.
But no charges at all filed yet.
You got some leverage if you're Denver. I mean, you're going to get the lowest price tag for easily a top five quarterback in the league. And at some point, that will wash over. And at some point, Deshaun Watson will be playing.
Yeah, it's how much do you care about the PR, right? Trading for Deshaun Watson right now. I don't know if he can be traded for. I mean, when he gets put on the commissioner's exempt list, he can't be traded. So there's going to be a period where I think Deshaun Watson is untouchable, but then it gets to a point optically, right?
Like, yeah, that's exactly it.
Do you want your organization to be affiliated with that guy? Do you want to be giving up stuff to go get a guy who's got 22 lawsuits against him right now? So it's interesting. Who makes more sense for Denver, Aaron Rodgers or the air humper?
I would say the air humper because he's younger.
Okay. See, for me, it's like I think Rodgers makes more sense because I think Denver, like Rod said, is
ready
a quarterback
to,
away.
Ready to
make
win
a win
right now.
Right now. And like Deshaun, obviously, is better long term. He's 12 years younger, but Aaron Rodgers right now is better than Deshaun.
Well, he's got less baggage, too.
And he's got
less
baggage.
You don't say that a lot about Rodgers.
No, believe it or not.
Yeah. No, they're ready to go because the defense will be good. I think they got the pass rush. Von Miller will be healthy. I think the defense will be okay. And Vic Fangio is a defensive guy. Shout out to Caden Stearns is going to be a part of that defense. But I think that ultimately you look at it, I think you got to look at the offense, and if they get the right weapons, is Melvin Gordon still there?
Yes.
Is he still there as a running back? Man, they got weapons. They just need Aaron Rodgers probably would be the piece that would make them competitive. And they got a history of that with Peyton Manning, of getting, a former MVP quarterback.
That worked out pretty well, I'd say.
Worked out really well for him.
Yeah, we'll
this would have been a good mini camp to go to if you're with the Texans, though, or San Francisco, as long as you're not getting injured.
Yeah, no mini camp for the Texans. We'll play some audio from David Coley a little bit later in the show, but I can't figure out what the Texans are doing ever. I mean, every day.
They don't want to win.
Every day where I think they've gone as far as they could go, they go even further.
They're not the only team canceling minicamps.
No,
though.
But for the Texans.
The Eagles have done it. And also
San Francisco
Colts,
for injuries.
The Colts have done it. Yeah, so there are some other teams who have canceled those minicamps.
I think that almost may be a built-in way, especially with the salary cap. You try and separate different ways with free agents and guys, and it's like, look, we know that this is the league has set this up with the NFLPA, that we can do this, but we're going to give you some time off. It's that cool prof that says, get out of here today.
Yeah, no, some of that. I totally agree with you.
You told everyone, that's a damn good prop.
Also, the Texans, not that it would matter, but Deshaun Watson, usually he would incur fines as a result of not being at those mandatory minicamps. That won't happen. Like, Aaron Rodgers will get fined, I don't know, what, $93,000 or something for not going to the mandatory minicamps. You don't have to worry about that. So I'm sure that was part of one of the variables in the decision they made.
Should it be?
Yeah.
Are you trying to please a guy who doesn't want to be there? What's the point of that? You should be punishing him for putting your franchise in limbo.
They're still trying to reconcile.
Yeah.
They're still trying to reconcile. There's no hope, but they still want to try.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens. 337-3776 is the Specs text line if you would like to chime in here on the Triple Option with RBKD. When we come back to Texas football, we're 86 days away from the Longhorn season opener against Louisiana. Our countdown to kickoff continues. Who are the best Longhorns to ever wear the number 86? It's next.
Motown S Thursday here on the Triple Option with RBKD. It is the Horn. We're live. We're local. We are digital. Get the Horn app. That'll help you out a lot. You can listen anywhere. We got people listening all over the globe. It's funny, some of the texts personally that we'll get or on the text line or tweets or any of that. And we appreciate all the people that have been listening. And with that app, it's really cool because you can listen anywhere you want, especially taking all those trips this summer. HornFM.com, if you would like to podcast any of the shows. We are 86 days away, guys. 86 days away from that opener that we talked about yesterday. That's going to be really tough. Texas hosting Louisiana. We've been giving the best numbers, the best guys to wear that number. 86, a lot of these stand out for me. 86 doesn't as much. I'll start with one guy, and I think we can best him, but had the first catch. An underrated guy on the 96 team. Big, tall, lanky, white guy. As Rod would say, if he's guarding him or covering him, he could probably choke slam him. Although he was tall and rangy, but a good route runner and caught the first pass of that 96 Big 12 championship game. About a 10-yard out, the James Brown put on the money to one Matt Davis.
The actor?
Not the actor.
I don't even know. Who's Matt Davis, the actor?
Oh, sorry.
Who's that?
I thought you said Matt Damon.
No, Matt Davis. Matt Davis, number 86.
Nice. Shout out, Matt Davis.
I'm in on that.
Okay.
I know my man CB threw out there, Tim Campbell.
Tim Campbell's probably the guy. Actually, Tim Campbell's better than
Tim Campbell.
Than Matt.
Earl's brother, Tim Campbell.
Defensive end.
People don't even know that.
He was built like Earl. Imagine Earl playing defensive end.
That's still scary.
Yo.
And Tim was scary.
Didn't Earl have twin younger brothers?
He did. There were a couple brothers, and I think they all played. But I think Tim, talking to my old school Texas people and the Bob Duns that were watching, then
he was a real one.
My dad always talks about Tim Campbell because Tim Campbell is underrated.
Mm.
Good nice. Defensive end.
Playing the league?
I don't know. At 5'11", I'm not sure.
Okay.
But he was one of those guys that wouldn't look the part necessarily, but certainly played it.
I've got Monte Lee as the best.
Okay.
86 in school history.
Yeah.
Two-time All-Conference defensive end in 59 and 60. So you've got to go way, way back for that.
I'll talk to Durwood about him.
There's an 86. Yeah. There's an 86 who is a part of one of the most infamous moments in Texas football history. The holder for Justin Tucker's game-winning kick in the final game against Texas A&M was Cade McCreary.
Oh, I thought he was 88.
86.
86.
I remember Cade.
Good dude. Actually a buddy of mine now, coaching high school ball, but he rocked the number 86.
His dad was my coach.
Yeah.
Hardy.
Hardy.
Mm-hmm. And he was recently a part of the Texas football program.
Yeah,
again,
he was doing
too, right?
Some stuff like with the T Association or one of those things.
Hardy's,
yeah. Hardy's a good dude.
Fantastic.
I
want
to say now
man.
He's working with like really the fun guy to. Like the Texas high school coach. So, like does like clinics and stuff. He's helping with some of the clinics and
I
stuff
believe
like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Cade McCreary in 86, the holder. That kick never happens if it's not for Cade McCreary.
Shout out.
We give him some love.
We don't give the holders or the 5-star deep snappers enough love.
True. got one of those this week.
We got to that, and Rod shaking his head. He's like, how do you give a deep snapper 5 stars?
Is he a 5-star? I know he's like the number two deep snapper in the country.
He put that, and it obviously was not the rankings we see all the time. No. There's some
he gave
site,
himself 5 stars.
There's
Good
some
him.
Site that does rank him. Well, if he's one of the top two, he'd be a 5-star.
Yeah.
No.
There's a deep snapper.
Okay.
There's a vote of confidence for Rod. Yeah. There. There's a deep snapper power rankings or a deep snapper only recruiting website, and that's how he made 5 stars. Jake Oliver. 86.
I remember Jake Oliver. I had higher expectations for Jake
too.
Oliver than most. I remember that.
Yeah, white receiver. So he was supposed to be the next Shipley.
Yeah. I know, because it works out that way.
That's basically what happened.
We everybody, always think it's going to work out.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's going to be the next Shipley then. Like, no, he wasn't.
Yeah, Jordan Pouncey, another 86 here relatively recently.
Yeah.
Peter Ullman in 86. Uh-huh. That's about all I could find. I mean, 80s for wide receivers are not cool anymore, guys.
No.
Now that wide receivers, I guess in college they've always kind of been allowed to pick and choose their number, but in the NFL now, as wide receivers are allowed to wear those numbers in the teens, and I guess, hell, they're allowed to wear any number now, but you just don't see as many 80s for talented wide receivers in today's football.
That was it, because, I mean, it was 80. I mean, think about when we were growing up, Steve Largent, Jerry Rice, you can go through the list, and really anything in the 80s.
Yeah,
I mean, look at the Oilers.
Yeah.
You can give you that. 84, Haywood, yeah. Jeffries, 81, Ernest Givens.
Unless they
Curtis Duncan, 80.
Unless they moved a running back to wide receiver or something, they all were 80s.
Right.
Now the game has changed. And I will admit, yeah, you don't look as sexy. You look sexier as a wide receiver in a slender number like, you know,
11, 11, 19, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Single digit or teens. Shout out to my man CB. He threw out, because he does his own countdown as well, he threw out Mike Campbell. Man, Mike Campbell.
Wasn't he a coach here?
And Tim Campbell?
Yeah, but his son's okay. Played. Yeah, he was a DC. Gotcha.
Peter Ullman, and he has, man, he goes
Mike
deep.
Campbell's up there.
Paxton Anderson, yeah, so maybe Mike Campbell's in there too.
Paxton Anderson, the current number 86, walk-on wide receiver from Highland Park.
Okay.
In Dallas. My rival high school. Am I allowed to like
him? No, you can trash him then.
How old are you?
He plays at Texas, though, so I like Texas.
How old are you, BK?
14 and a half.
No, you're 27, I believe. 26?
You're around.
No, you okay. Can. If it's a rival.
Whatever. You're there. You can get over that.
You can trash a rival any time in your life.
Really?
Yeah, I'll take shots at rivals.
High school rivals?
Yeah, I'll take shot at Bel Air all the time. Bel Air.
I'll take shot at my middle school rivals. Yeah, those are guys I went to high school with. Yeah. I still hate them. They went to North.
That may be more of an North. Jeez. That may be more of an Austin thing. To okay. Where I'm just proud, I'm so proud of where Central Texas has come. They've come a long way in my life. And so now there's a Lake Travis guy, there's a Bowie guy. I'm like, go for it.
Yeah, give I think us now, some the, love. Now the Lake Travis, the Westlake rivalry is more heated than it was when you were there.
There
sure.
were 3A stoners.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean that as a compliment. Yeah. Y'all were fun to go wakeboard with. Now, a lot of fun. But we never played them in anything.
Now it's heated.
Yeah.
Now it's,
I mean, that happened.
That's the best.
That happened in the last 20 years. Lake Travis was nothing when I was growing up.
Strange. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Five titles later.
Since we're shouting CB, the question you brought up earlier where we're talking about what was the last coach at Texas to football coach, assistant coach, to leave under their own accord and not be forced out in some way. My man CB threw out there, it was Brian Harsin.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, because he left for the Arkansas State.
You brought that up,
State
and then
drive.
Major took that over.
Yeah, there you go. That's the last one.
But you also brought up why he kind of saw the sausage being made and said, "Get me the hell out of here."
Yeah, he saw it coming. He knew.
Usually, coordinators at a school like Texas take better head jobs than Arkansas State.
Yeah.
So I think part of it was a lot of it was the writing on the wall that y'all were talking
about. Brian Harsin, if you look at beautiful wife, but also kind of the sports car that he drove, which was really. More almost late 80s, early 90s cool. It was cool, but every time I saw him, I thought, you would have been a great, the cool guy in school in a John Hughes film back in the day. The look, everything about it. The car, the wife.
I like that. That's great. You hit the nail on the head.
You got me?
Yeah, you got it.
86 days away.
Karate Kid 4.
I see it.
Featuring Brian Harsin.
Yeah, he would have been the blonde guy.
2010 Brian Harsin.
Right, exactly.
Not Brian Harsin.
Sweep the leg, Brian.
Unreal. 86 days away from Texas and Louisiana. We'll, of course, have that game and every UT football game here on the Horn. We'll have every UT baseball game the remainder of the way here on the Horn as well. About 52 hours away from first pitch of Game 1 of the Super Regional Texas and South Florida. Earlier today on Bucky and Aaron, head coach David Pierce was on with the guys, and he previewed South Florida. What's the message to the Longhorns going up against the only 4 seed still remaining in the NCAA tournament? We'll tell you next.